You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy hump day, Rockets fans. It's Wednesday, so the odds are it may be smack dab in the middle of a busy work week for you. That's certainly the case for the Rockets themselves, who are in Charlotte tonight, right in the middle of a 3-game-in-4-night stretch. It began Monday night at home against the Atlanta Hawks, got the 8-point win. They travel to Charlotte tonight to play a Hornets team that right now is on the inside of the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference, and then they play another Eastern Conference team, a very East-heavy schedule at the moment, at home against the Miami Heat on Thursday. Then they actually continue it next week, Boston, Toronto, and Philly. So Rockets actually in a span right now of 6 consecutive games against Eastern opponents. So both to look back at the recent wins, we mentioned Monday against Atlanta, but certainly we're still basking in the afterglow a bit of what happened last weekend against the Warriors, and to look forward to the games ahead, starting with tonight. That's what we're going to do right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Wednesday morning, the Rockets are just about 12 hours or so away from tipping off an early start Houston time against the Charlotte Hornets tonight. Then they'll hop a plane right after the game back to Houston to finish off this 3-game-in-4-night stretch. Fortunately, they'll have both Friday and Saturday completely off, allowing them to recapture their legs before flying up to Boston, a Sunday afternoon game on ABC, and then continuing on to Toronto on Tuesday. What promises to be, at least on paper, a much more challenging week next week than the current one against the likes of the Hawks, the Hornets, the Heat. But if there's something that we should know by following the Rockets this year, they actually seem to play their best in the bigger games when the lights are at their brightest against marquee opponents. So who knows? Perhaps that will help them. But clearly, the last few days, beyond just the upheaval on the floor, you went from the lows of blowing a 19-point lead in LA, the Scott Foster fiasco, to the highs of beating the Warriors, and now with 2 consecutive wins, you're 10 games over 500, tying your high watermark, 35 and 25 now, in terms of distance between you and 500. You're in the 5 spot in the Western Conference, just a couple of games back of the Portland Trailblazers. And even as far as getting a top 3 spot, it's not like the Oklahoma City Thunder have run off and hid. So there's a lot to play for in these upcoming games, and there's also a lot to watch for, because in addition to obviously needing to win the games, there have been a lot of changes of late. The Rockets going to a bigger starting lineup, 2 consecutive games now of P.J. Tucker, Kenneth Faried, Clint Capela, the most traditional the Rockets have looked in the Mike D'Antoni era, trying to improve their rebounding. We've also seen James Harden have his consecutive game streak, scoring 30-plus points, finally snapped at 32. That's the second longest streak in NBA history. He scored just 28 on Monday night, in part because he was 0 of 10 from the 3-point line, still seemed to be struggling a bit from that neck injury he suffered in practice last week. And then, one reason it didn't matter, the Rockets are fully healthy, and thankfully, that includes Chris Paul, who has had back-to-back brilliant games, 23-17, leading the way even without Harden to get the big win at Golden State, then followed it up with 28-6, just 1 turnover, and shot 50% from the field in Monday's win over the Atlanta Hawks. So to break down those themes and a lot more, basically everything going on with the Houston Rockets these days, I'm going to be joined by a good friend of mine momentarily. He's a guest you should be familiar with, both from this program and his writing work. His name is Ali Bajani, and he is the Rockets reporter for The Athletic, based here in Houston. So without any further delay, let's go straight to the phone lines and get Ali connected right here at Locked On Rockets. Ali, how's it going, my friend?
I'm doing great, Ben. How are you?
Doing a lot better after the last 2 games, and I think that's applicable to anyone listening, or 99% of those listening to this podcast. And even though James Harden, Chris Paul, there's some new things with them, I want to start off our chat with the more fascinating X's and O's development, which I know is where you thrive. And that's the decision to go with this bigger lineup, P.J. Tucker, Kenneth Faried, Clint Capela on the front line. And the 2 things that jump out, first off, why are they doing it? And secondly, can it work? The first question I think is fairly obvious. The most consistent element of their poor defense all year long has been their subpar rebounding. You're the bottom of the league. You have talked a lot, including on your last visit on the show, about how their poor weak side rebounding often leads them or leaves them out of position, and it breaks down even if the perimeter defense is fine. So going more traditional up front, it gives you a better chance to fix the rebounding issue, which might be your best ticket to fixing the entire defense. And as far as why they're implementing it this week, you're playing some Eastern Conference teams that are below 500, so you have a greater margin of error if there are growing pains, like we saw a few of them last night, or Monday night, that is, against the Atlanta Hawks. So I think it's obvious why. As far as can it work, as I see it, it's just going to be watching to see what the trade-off is. Clearly, some of the spacing that you've come to know the Rockets as having under Mike D'Antoni, Ryan Anderson, PJ Tucker at the four, it's not going to be quite the same. The flip side is that you are going to have more of a rebounding presence with Kenneth Furry there. So it's just a matter of, do you get enough with defensive rebounds to offset whatever advantages you have when you're going small? That's how you see it. But in your eyes, how are you going to define success with this change? What do they need to see for it to be considered something that they're going to stick with?
You know, Ben, I will not lie. I was very skeptical when I saw Coach D'Antoni say that this lineup is something they could go to and, in fact, play this lineup. The first few minutes in, I was kind of like, wow, this isn't failing. It's working pretty well. And, you know, through three games, they've won two of them. Overall, by the way, that lineup has a plus or minus of minus one, mm-hmm. which I don't really think kind of tells the whole story, kind of encompasses what happened yesterday in the game, especially when they had the quick hook in the second half. But I really do think this lineup can work, and I talked to both Clint and I talked to both Kenneth after the game about it, and one thing that they're very happy about is that there's still time. They alluded to the fact that they're playing some weaker Eastern Conference teams this week, and it allows them to kind of get more chemistry developing on the court. And the biggest thing is, now that you have two guys playing together who are both big, they have to be able to communicate and work off each other to essentially generate the same shot selection that you had whenever you were playing smaller with three guards in a wing and a big, but now with essentially two guards, a wing, and two bigs. So that kind of throws up the spacing a little bit. So both those guys have to be very cognizant of where they are on the floor, who is screening the ball, who is going to pop out for a set shot, who's going to cut inside on isolation to help free up more space. All those things are what Clint and Kenneth are talking about, what they're trying to continue to figure out for this lineup to continue to be successful. Because as we saw yesterday, if it's not working, the good thing about this Rockets team is that we both know they are versatile enough with this added depth where they can go and bring Eric in and kind of shift back to kind of where they usually like to play. Or if they don't want to do that, they can even go to a four-guard lineup. But ultimately, to the point you first started with, and something I've talked about for the whole season, weak side rebounding is the biggest thing that's keeping this team from being at least middle of the pack defensive rebounding wise, and to catapult them into top 15, top 10 defense. Is they have to be able to secure that defensive rebound. Teams are shooting better and a much more higher volume of attempts on threes compared to what they did against the Rockets last season, and that's kind of accounted for where we've seen this dip in for the Rockets defensively. It's because teams are launching so many more threes. And if they're not able to essentially box out, or if they're not able to limit them to one possession, we're going to continue to see these issues happen.
You mentioned Eric Gordon earlier, and I think his selflessness is an important point to underscore, his willingness to start or off the bench. His minutes are the same, so he doesn't seem to have any attitude concerns. That's definitely a plus. He's been near the Rockets' leading scorer. He was, actually, in Golden State on Saturday night. And then against Atlanta, he had the best plus-minus on the team at plus 18, I believe, on Monday night. But to get back to Fried and Clint specifically, you talked a lot about the spacing on offense. I want to flip it to the defensive side, because that's where, to me, the X's and O's get very intriguing. Obviously, the upshot is that you're going to get a lot more rebounds. You address that with your weak side rebounding take. Clearly, that's something that's bothered them all season long. The flip side to it is that you're going to be really weak on the perimeter, because Clint Capella has clearly taken at least a bit of a step back this year in terms of the switching scheme, how well he hangs on guards. We know Fareed does not really do well in that setting. and James Harden, while he can be good at times, with Harden defensively, it's more about how you play him, and you want to put him down in the post as much as possible. So as I see it, at least to start the game, you know, you've got two bigs, neither of whom is especially good on the perimeter with Capella and Fareed. You've got Harden, who is predominantly a post defender. Chris Paul is solid, but at 33 years old, he hasn't moved laterally the way he did earlier in his career. So there are some things that Jeff Bezdelic is going to have to figure out. I suppose the upshot is that even if they get beaten off the drive, if they're blown by, they are longer now, and both Capella and Fareed are good weak side shot blockers. So maybe even if you're beaten, you can recover more than the Rockets have for much of this year. But how do you see that playing out, the dynamic that even though you're bigger, now all of a sudden you have a few more concerns when it comes to stopping dribble penetration?
The Rockets, then, are a team that likes to switch 1-4 primarily. And what that means is that off the ball, all those different actions, they're going to switch everything. Now, where they sometimes don't switch, and this is why I always use the term hybrid switching, is because with that five position, they'll switch with James Harden is involved in that pick and roll to go back to that point you talked about to get him matched up in the post because, as we all know, James Harden is a 91st percentile post defender. He's very good down there. He has a 20-plus percent turnover percentage there where he forces opponents into turnovers. And so whenever you have that and whenever that happens, that's when the Rockets ideally like to switch. Now, with Kenneth and Clint on the court together, ideally for the Rockets and talking to those around the team, it's good for them to essentially have Kenneth as somebody who can go onto the perimeter and have Clint skate back and be that weak side shot blocker you talked about. And ideally, they would like to have Kenneth go onto the perimeter and have Clint skate back as that weak side shot blocker. And talking to Kenneth about it, you know, he seems like he's very confident in his ability to play out there, to use his energy to be able to make a difference. And, you know, some on the coaching staff really credit Kenneth for kind of changing his game. Because I talked to one of the coaches, and I was like, you know, Kenneth wasn't really a good switch defender back when he was with Denver when I was watching tape of him. And now, you know, he's serviceable. The energy is there. It's allowing him to be a little bit effective on those switches. And what the Rockets are kind of doing too is when a switch is about to happen, you don't see Kenneth just kind of letting the switch happen. Kenneth is stepping up, kind of jumping in front of the ball handler. So when the switch does occur, Kenneth is reading the ball handler right at the apex. And so when that happens, yes, Kenneth may sometimes get beaten off the dribble, but you do have Clint back there to help you out, number one. And number two, his energy allows him to at least be a little bit disruptive and disrupt the rhythm just enough where you can kind of make it difficult on the opponent. So I think ultimately the Rockets feel it because of his energy and because of kind of some of the subtle fundamental changes Kenneth has made, that having Clint back inside the paint, having Kenneth step up, use his energy to at least be effective or at least serviceable on these switches is going to help this Rocket, team continue to play that lineup.
Continuing our conversation with Ali Bajani, Rockets writer for The Athletic. You can follow his stuff at Rockets_insider on Twitter or at www.theathletic.com. That's the website. Ali, we'll move on to James Harden and Chris Paul momentarily, but one more thing I want to follow up related to the lineup shift. To me, beyond just the X's and O's of how it's going to work with Fareed and Capella, and it's still to be determined just how much they'll play together. They played together a lot in the Warrior game, not as much against the Hawks, where in the second half, the plug got pulled on it after about 3 minutes. And as you mentioned, they went smaller with some of their more traditional Eric Gordon lineups at the three. But the Rockets' willingness to try this on the fly, it's so interesting to me because a lot of folks around the league, to me, they still kind of miss the mark on what it is that defines the Daryl Morey era Rockets. Because in my eyes, a lot of people think of the Morey ball Rockets as threes, free throws, and layups. And to an extent, that's true. That is how it's played out. But the reality is that the reason that the Rockets have gone that route is because that was the market inefficiency. And you think back to last year, one of the terms that Matt Bullard, TV analyst, used to use a lot was math problem. The Rockets, just by volume of threes comparatively to so many other teams, would just, they would end up winning because it's hard not to when you have that much of an advantage. You make that many threes and the other team isn't even taking that many. But now you're seeing more teams start to utilize that style. And perhaps now it's the Rockets looking to see what's next on the curve. And in my estimation, Ollie, it kind of reminds me, you know, you think back to the Moneyball movie, the Oakland A's, and there was the stereotype in baseball, the early 2000s, that the A's were all about these low average, high OBP, on base percentage type hitters. The reality, it wasn't really about that. It's just that's what the market sort of undervalued at the time. So that's the reaction, or that's the direction that they went. And that's just the reaction that it led to on the market. So in this case, what I see the Rockets doing here, we don't know if it's going to work or not. But to me, it's kind of reflective of their overall state of mind as an organization, which is that, you know, they're not married to the three-point shot. They're just trying to find what the inefficiency is. And now maybe, you know, they're trying to find a different way of rebounding and defense to adjust to what the league has made to their adjustments. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think it does. And I think, you know, continuing your point, when you think about the way the NBA has shifted, and I think this is, when people talk about the Rockets defense in last season, but I kind of want to make this point really quick to join into what you're talking about. The Rockets defense last season was so effective because they baited teams. When you bait teams the way the Rockets did, you're forcing them to feed the ball into the post because you think posting up Chris Paul or Eric Gordon or James Harden is a mathematical advantage for you because you feel like you're going to score on them easily.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened last season? The Rockets brought an extra double team, forced a kickout, forced rotations, and more times than not, they were able to secure the defensive rebound and push the tempo on transition themselves. This season, we're not seeing teams as much go into the post against James Harden or any of these other guys. Yes, there will be those handful of games when that happens, and the Rockets do a pretty good job of defending because they know what to do. They know how to make that great wall of China, how I used to like to call it, on the weak side and kind of mess up all the movement. But nowadays, teams are like, you know what? You're going to switch? Well, I'm going to let my little guard go against Clint or go against Canada, go against Nene and launch up a three. And more times than not, they're making those. And that high volume of shots is what's getting that net rating for the Rockets to dwindle compared to last season. And so what the Rockets are doing now is that, you know what? Possessions are valued. We need to secure the basketball. We need to make sure that we are not letting the opposing team get the basketball more times than they should. And that's what the problem was earlier this season. The Rockets would, you know, do a good job in the first half or first three-fourths of the shot clock. Last couple seconds, give up a shot. If they missed it, they wouldn't secure the defensive rebound in the second half. Second chance opportunity, kick out three-pointer would go down. And next thing you know, all the effort would be wasted. Now you're having a secondary big in there. Even if opposing teams continue to switch Clint Capela onto the perimeter, you have Kenneth there using his energy to secure the defensive rebound. Instead of a team possibly getting 60, 70, 80, 90 possessions in a game, you're limiting them to a couple, three, four, five, six possessions less than they normally would. And as we've seen, Ben, that's the difference in every single game this season. Those small number of possessions to help you push the lead in transition.
Mm-hmm.
The way the Rockets want to play is to be able to play fast. If they secure the rebound, ideally for them, and ideally for the coaching staff, is let's score in the first six, 7 seconds of the shot clock. But that's not what they can't do that this season because they've been struggling grabbing those defensive rebounds. And now by securing the rebound, limiting the opposing team to only one possession, getting another possession themselves, the Rockets are playing into a different type of mathematical advantage.
I want to switch gears to James Harden, and you can put your medical hat on here if you want. We now know the neck injury, according to Mike D'Antoni, he ran into a screen at practice last Wednesday. Kind of amazing he played the next day and put up 30 the last game of his 32 consecutive scoring 30-plus points. That one against the Lakers last Thursday, the Scott Foster game, as I call it. Last night, or Monday that is, he was snapped at 28 in the win over the Hawks, but shot just 7 of 21. His floater game was fine. He made 7 of 11 shots inside the arc, including the second half, some pretty difficult ones over the Hawks' length, and they still went in. As far as the three-point shot, he's 2 of 20 in his last two games, including 0 of 10 on Monday. He got to the free throw line 16 times too and made 14. But to me, it's the 3-point shot, at least statistically, that is clearly the most off. Many of them weren't that close. So, number one, are you surprised by that? That even when you look at his game, you would think that, well, if he's attacking off the dribble, then maybe the shots like the floaters where he might take contact would be most affected. But for some reason, it seems to be the 3-point shot that since he's had that injury, now 2 of 20, seems to be the biggest impact. And is it anything that you're noticing with him mechanically, or is it just something that combination of the injury, randomness, and it should ultimately even out over time?
Yeah, before I start, I just want to say to Rockets fans, there's a big misconception with James Harden shooting threes. So, like, at the end of games, I saw, especially when, not fans, but some commentators who are high profile on the radio, usually watch Rockets games whenever they play national television, and they'll say, oh my goodness, why is James Harden shooting so many threes and late in the shot clock? Oh my God. Well, buddy, he's shooting 42, 43% on those for the season. I mean, clearly something is going well where the Rockets allow him to do what he's doing. And so that's an efficient shot for the team. I just want to get out of there because it kind of was bothering me the last few games.
Yeah.
Especially from people who don't watch the Rockets much. It's like, come on, man. You can't say he should stop shooting. Clearly, the Rockets would not be, 21-11 in the last 32 games during that streak if it wasn't for James Harden shooting what he did late in the shot clock. If teams take away the primary option, he has to do what he has to do. And he's very good at it. But to the point about why he's missing the last few games, I do think the neck is giving him some issues. He will never admit it. Ben, one thing that you and I both know, that nothing's going to stop James Harden from playing, no matter what it is. If he can come to Toyota Center, and he comes in at the usually like around 5:15, 5:30 times, and he comes in and he goes out there, warms up, he's going to play. That's just who James Harden is. He's a dog. But in terms of mechanically, I did know, I was sitting next to couple of reporters yesterday, and I made a note of it. Whenever James Harden is measuring up his defenders, he'll actually go to that lullaby dribble. Well, yesterday, I didn't really see him utilize his head as much to make those fakes or to get the defender off balance, and that's kind of what made it easier for those defenders to kind of just quickly step up, contest a shot, make him as uncomfortable as possible. And what we also saw yesterday was the Hawks were like, you know what? We're not letting you play one-on-one. As soon as it gets late in the shot clock, we're going to send a second guy your way. And usually, you know, James doesn't really care about that. He'll just slide left a little bit, kind of square with his left, slide right a little bit square with his left shoulder, knock it down. But yesterday, that seemed to be bothering him. And you combine that with the neck issue and kind of turning his head and squaring up. I just think there's a lot of different combinations that kind of contributed to that 0 of 10 shooting night.
Last topic, and apologies for the blippy audio to our listeners recording this in a thunderstorm, unfortunately, but the one Rockets name we have not talked about enough is the guy who has been most instrumental to their last two wins, and that's Chris Paul, averaging more than 20 points, 10 assists per game. He shot 50% from the field on Monday in the win over the Hawks. Just some of the best numbers we've seen from him in some time. He looks fresh. He's moving well, from my estimation. Everything you want to see from him, the turnovers are down. Is there anything different that he is doing, or is it just a matter of he's finally healthy?
You know, I being back at Toyota Center yesterday, I can actually go talk to people, kind of get an idea, because that was one thing I was concerned about. I mean, I wasn't very overreactive and said that Chris Paul was washed. I don't think he's washed, but I was concerned when he first came back from the hamstring. He didn't look as fast as he used to. He tried to push the pace as he always does, but everything was just a touch off from what he normally does. But the last few games, like you said, he's looked really good. And ultimately, when you talk to the team, it's more about he's gotten more reps in. He's a couple more games in. He's getting his strength back. He has more rhythm in his shot, more rhythm in the way he wants to play. I think in the combination of that and all the rest that he's had over the last few weeks and months coming back from this injury, He looks like a guy who's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the Western Conference. And I think ultimately, for the way the Rockets want to play, having two contrasting styles on the court against opposing defense is going to help so much. And the area of concern with Chris Paul, especially this season, has been, can he continue to create space against bigs? You know, sometimes the way the NBA is nowadays, you're going to face bigs who have incredible length and are going to be able to contest his shots. And he's going to have to use his left shoulder a little bit more to create some space. But to be honest, he doesn't have to do all of that to be successful. He's such a good spread pick and roll player. And I asked one of his teammates about this. I'm like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about he looks like he's lost a step or not as good as isolation. They told me he doesn't have to do isolation. He's such a smart guy with the basketball that all you have to do is set a really nice high screen for him, and his teammates just have to be ready and moving around the perimeter to catch the ball and shoot the three. And that's what we're seeing. His assist numbers have been the highest they've been all season. He's got 20 points in, I think, three consecutive games. He's seeing the floor really well right now. His teammates are responding back to him. And I think if we go to Second Spectrum or Synergy and look at how many ball screens he's had, there's probably more ball screens than he's had here in the last three games than he's had all season long. I think that's definitely on purpose.
Good stuff as always from you, Ollie. Before we let you go, anything you want to toss out as far as upcoming work at The Athletic or anywhere else that you're working with on Twitter, @Rockets_insider, athletic at www.theathletic.com. Anything you or Kelly Eco are working on in the days ahead?
Yeah, I know I'm working on a story with Kenneth and Clint on the X's and O's of how can that lineup be successful. There's a certain play that I didn't talk about today on the show, but I'm going to save it for the article where Chris Paul ran it a lot of times and with the Clippers. And if you talk to assistant coaches around the league, you talk to scouts, Chris Paul is known for that play in terms of how effective he is as a decision maker and how good Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan were playing with him in that kind of set. In the last three games that the Rockets have played with Kenneth Faried and Clint Capela on the floor together, we've seen this set run a lot. So I've been working on a story on that set, trying to get the readers and subscribers an idea of what that is, that we'll be seeing what we'll be seeing a lot more from in terms of that set, and just kind of a more of an X's and O's perspective of how can this Kenneth Faried, Clint Capela lineup continue to work, and is this something that can we see this lineup more of in the postseason? So look out for that in the coming days.
Sounds good. I really like that analogy, actually, for Eden Capella to Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. You can see some similarities there, so look forward to reading it. Great stuff there from Ollie Vajani. Again, if you want to read his work, you can do so at theathletic.com, or you can follow him on Twitter @Rockets_insider. So with that, that's where we'll break it on this Wednesday. This will probably be our only episode of the day. I know there's a game tonight, but we'll probably fold in whatever happens with tonight's game with our recap Thursday evening of Rockets Heat, simply because there's such limited shelf life. Now, if something wild happens tonight, a major injury, Harden goes for 60, of course we'll break in, but this will probably be our Wednesday show, and then Thursday we'll talk about both the Hornets game tonight and the Heat game tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll have two Rockets wins to talk about, but stay tuned. In a season with so much upheaval, so much volatility, nothing would surprise you with these Houston Rockets. For today, though, I think this is enough Rockets talk for one day, and if you want even more content than this, of course, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I mentioned Ollie on there, @Rockets_insider. I'm on there myself, @BenDubose, but we've also got the Locked on Rockets handle. That's where you can find all of our shows, and if you're interested in our prior content, then of course you can be on Twitter. Also go to our Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Also post some occasional videos there from the arena when the Rockets are at home, like on Monday when I got a one-on-one with Terrence Jones, but you can also go to LockedOnRockets.com. So many ways you can consume content as far as past shows, Rockets coverage, and beyond that. You can also email LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you want to know more about the team, you've got suggestions for the show, or if you're interested in becoming a potential advertiser of this program, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, whatever I can help you with as far as being a Rockets fan or even you as a human being and growing your business. Don't hesitate to reach out, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. And even if you can't advertise yourself, one other way that you can help us, subscribe and leave 5-star reviews. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, based on the strength of our collective Lockdown Podcast Network. By the way, I should have mentioned earlier, another Twitter and Instagram handle, LockedOnNBAnet. That's the curated feed. You can see our other experts across the network. But based on the overall strength of that network, our distribution is wide. So even if you want episodes in other avenues, and actually before I can post them to my Twitter feed, @BenDubose, Well, if you subscribe, then you get the benefit of episodes as soon as they come out, delivered right to your inbox. And if you both subscribe and leave 5-star reviews, that's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers. Even if you can't advertise yourself, you can still help us look attractive to these other advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked On Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Once again, for Ali Bajani, a.k.a. Rockets underscore insider on Twitter, and myself, thanks as always for listening, and please come back soon for more episodes right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of everything Houston Rockets basketball.